probably been about 10 years or so, I think, there was this fad going around largely among kids. They'd wear bracelets, and on the bracelet were the letters WWJD, meaning, what would Jesus do? Good question, you know, and it helped kids, I think, develop a kind of personal ethic and all of that. But it, as far as it goes, it doesn't fully address the ministry of the church, especially the ministry of the church in troubled times. Maybe a bracelet that said, what would Jesus have us do, would make more sense. Because Jesus was an uncommonly good sport, and mirroring what he would do is pretty darn hard. But the good news is he has given us very explicit, plain language, simple instructions on what he would have us do. That's the good news. The bad news is these are the instructions from Matthew 5, chapter 5, verse 38. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist one who is evil. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And in case you missed it, a couple of verses later, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Seriously? This week? In Charlottesville? Pray for your enemies. Now I want to be clear about something right at the start as to who the enemy is. There is a reasoned debate over what should and shouldn't be and how we should or should not remember the Confederacy. That's not the issue. We can have reasoned differences of opinions about that. That debate, however, has been hijacked by terrorists. That's the enemy. How are we going to love that and pray for that? It's been 10 or 15 years that an interesting book came out entitled The Continuing Challenge of AIDS, Clergy Responses to Patients, Friends, and Families. And the book essentially articulated what clergy were doing with, at the time, a pretty seriously outcast group, hated by many, that Jesus would have them do. There was a surprising level of benevolence, even among very conservative clergy, early on in the age of AIDS in the U.S., depending on essentially one thing. The most critical factor in what made for or led to benevolence and tolerance was the answer to the question, do you know someone? Do you know someone who loves someone with AIDS? In other words, this abstract issue, this seemingly foreign enemy, if you will, once that took on a human face or had a name, benevolence and tolerance followed, even among those from whom you would not expect. In that light, and by way of analogy, this is what I, on my best day, hope I would say to a white supremacist on the other side of a free speech zone. Not likely, not entirely out of the question. Texas Tech has a fairly small free speech zone, and for all I know, there will be a free speech rally at some point, and there will be counter-protesters involved. Here's what I would like to think I might say if I met in the middle with a white supremacist. I would say, first, my name is Jerry. What's yours? Maybe they say so, maybe they don't. I would say, I have 7 grandchildren who love me, and I love them. And I would tell that person their names. And I might ask, you got kids in your life? Anybody love you? What are their names? And then I would like to say, if in the unlikely event you're driving away from this place and I'm behind you in my car, and you're in a terrible accident, and you are deeply injured, I will stop and do whatever it is that's in my power to help you immediately and summon help for you. And maybe they would do the same, maybe they wouldn't. And after that, I would say, now I'm going to go back to the other side of the free speech zone, and I'm going to stand there and be quiet. Turn the other cheek. What the heck? Well, I think a start on this would be, to take something of a vow of silence. At least stop shouting. Might have been helpful in Charlottesville to stop shouting. And by that I mean maybe take another minute before you share or like or post or retweet something that's shrill. Stop shouting. Theology professor used to tell us, never get into a spraying contest with a skunk. Because pretty quick, you both smell just the same, and you're not. Stop shouting. Which is not to say wishy-wash or sell out. Stand firm. Stand firm, maybe silently. You know, there's room for reasoned debate and even mutual respect in most ideological differences and morality debates. There's room for two sides, except when it's a swastika. 200,000 American heroes were lost in Europe fighting the terror and the evil that that symbol represents. It's illegal in Germany to display it, and for a reason. They remember. Amidst all the noise and rhetoric this week, I think Mitt Romney nailed it when he said, no, not the same. One side is racist, bigoted, Nazi. The other side opposes racism and bigotry. Morally different universes. That's standing firm. Not exactly silent, but kind of quiet comparatively. Which is a very powerful approach to addressing evil. Stand silent, stand firm. It's a memory that anyone who was alive at the time will never forget. One guy in Tiananmen Square standing in front of a tank driven by another guy. And he just stood there. And presumably for all the abstract issues involved with the rebels and the government, when it came down to one guy standing in front of a tank and one guy driving the tank, the driver didn't run him over. He stood firm and stood silent, not unlike the world-changing, one-by-one, silent, standing firm, or sitting firm in the case of Rosa Parks, or those who sat at lunch counters and drank from drinking fountains, until finally enough of us, figured out, this is nuts, this is wrong, and things changed. Standing silent, standing firm, resolved for what's right. Turning the other cheek, perhaps, and changing the world in that way. And then Jesus has to take it one step further. Pray for those who persecute you. Think of that great line in Fiddler on the Roof where Tevye is asked if there's a prayer for the Tsar. May God bless and keep the Tsar far away from us. Yeah, good idea. Well, you know what? I would pray for our finding a common humanity. Those who brandish swastikas and those who stand next to them and call it patriotism are socially isolated. They live in echo chambers, in a small group or even online. They have in their own minds turned opponents into enemies and enemies into things. That's the only way you can do to violence. That's the only way you can do violence to other people. Pray that they and all of us really can find some common ground and know the name of a human face who has stood firm. All of us know at least one hero, a hero who proved in liberating strife that terror is wrong and it must be eliminated. And symbols of tyranny need to stop. Maybe that creates a common humanity if we all band together and Pray for that. I know a hero who liberated Europe, Giles McCrary. We all know him. We knew him. And he tells a story of why Silent Night was his favorite hymn. And his story, oddly enough, was not unique. You can go to the internet, and there were many, many times this happened. But it happened to him, where he was quite literally across an enemy line, more or less face to face with the German enemy at Christmas. And for all they were trying to do or not do in terms of eradicating each other, on Christmas, Silent Night was common ground. And they sang across the line, Silent Night. Pray for common ground and shared humanity. I will pray that those who carried signs and even swastikas be moved. I think they can be moved. Yesterday's Boston rally was different. A free speech rally was called. And instead of thousands, 100 showed up. And 40,000 counter-protesters stood, not as silently as I might have wanted, but stood firm that this is wrong. Maybe we're figuring it out. 40,000 to 100. Some were moved to stay away. Maybe they were moved because they knew now the names of three heroes who were lost. Heather Heyer, H.J. Cullen, Burke Bates. Once you know their names, it's no longer an abstract ideology. And violence came home. And 40,000 stood firm against it. Stand silent, stand firm, pray. Maybe one thing more. I didn't have Silent Night rolling through my head this week, but I do have musical earworms every once in a while. And Wednesday, right about the time all this stuff was really intense, I suddenly found myself humming, well, what arguably was the anthem of the civil rights movement. I went online and I found a sort of out-of-focus video of Joan Baez and the wonderful voice that she had many years ago and still does, singing at Woodstock, We Shall Overcome. Simple song. And I'll post that link to the website. And it was oddly moving, not just in and of itself, but at that moment. We shall overcome. Kind of a prayer. And then I got to thinking, anyone that I know, most everyone I know, that is now eligible for Social Security, and you know who you are, most of us were raised as children with assumptions about people that are different from us, racially or ethnically. We were raised with some assumptions, many of which we have had to unlearn. We have sought diligently to unlearn, and maybe even now openly reject. We're better for it. We have overcome. And in light of everything that's happened this week, I am, because of that, more optimistic, surprisingly optimistic, really, that standing silent, essentially not shouting back, standing firm on what we know is right, praying for social connection and common ground, and maybe singing, we have overcome. We shall overcome.